President's Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprint, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprint on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour on this May the 8th on the West Coast, or May the 9th, early morning hours, and in the Central Time Zone as well. It's nice to have you here with us this evening. We're having trouble getting a hold of tonight's guest for some reason. So we will still move on as usual. And if we're able to make contact with him, he will be joining us. And, of course, those of you who tune in regularly, especially on Fridays, know my regular Friday guest is our science advisor, scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, Mr. Jim Murray. And we're hoping nothing bad has happened. So let's just be positive and blame it on the communications. Well, what is going on in the world? I got to read a letter. In fact, I'd like to share this with you. It's a letter that someone sent to Barack Obama. It's called Help Me. Excuse me, Mr. Obama. I mean, President Obama, sir. I know you're busy and important and stuff. I mean, running the country is very important, and I hate to bother you, sir. I will only take a minute. Okay, sir? See, I have these missing pieces that are holding me up, and I was wondering, sir, if you could take time out of your busy schedule and help me out. You know, no big deal, just some loose ends and things. Hey, you have a nice place here. The wife sees houses like this on TV all the time and says, boy, she wishes she had digs like this, you know. Is that painting real? Really? Wow, I saw something like that in a museum once. Oh, sorry, sir. I didn't mean to get off the track, so if you could just help me out a minute and give me some details, I will get right out of your way. I want to close this case and maybe take the wife to Coney Island or something. Ever been to Coney Island, sir? No? I didn't think so. Well, listen, anyway, I can't seem to get some information. I need to wrap this up. These things seem to either be not released or not available. I'm sure it's just an oversight or a glitch or something, so if you could tell me where these things are, I have them written down here somewhere. Oh, wait. Sorry about the smears. It was raining out. I'll just read it to you. Could you please help me find these things, sir? Number one, Occidental College records, not released. Number two, Columbia College records, not released. Number three, Columbia thesis paper, not available. Number four, Harvard College records, not released. Number five, Selective Service registration, not released. Number six, medical records, not released. Number seven, Illinois State Senate schedule, not available. Number eight, your Illinois State Senate records, not available. Number nine, law practice client list, not released. Number 10, certified copy of original birth certificate, not released. Embossed, no, this is number 11. Embossed signed paper certification of live birth, not released. Number 12, record of your baptism, not available. Oh, and one more thing, Mr. President. I can't seem to find any articles you published as editor of the Harvard Law Review or as a professor at the University of Chicago. Can you explain that to me, sir? Oh, but hey, listen, I know you're busy. If this is too much for you right now, I mean, tell you what, I'll come back tomorrow. Give me some time to get these things together, you know? I mean, I know you're busy. I'll just let myself out. I'll be back tomorrow and the day after. What's that, Mr. President? Who wants to know these things? We, the people of the United States of America. You know, the ones that vote. Very interesting piece there. I don't know who to credit for that piece, other than the people of the United States of America that are awake. For example, those listening to the show tonight. And I'm going to take a quick peek here and see if we've got our guest on the line. We may have him. Jim, are you with us by any chance? Nope, I guess we're not. Or he's not. So we'll try again. Anyway, we'll try to do something here. Now, we might even have a surprise guest in a couple of minutes here. I've got a couple of things to say, and I'm going to try and bring somebody on board. We'll give Jim a couple more minutes here. This is an interesting piece because it's outlining a lot of things. Of course, we are due some explanations. For example, why the story about Kansas when the so-called grandparents were in Oklahoma working for the Rockefellers, working for Standard Oil Company, actually working directly for John D. Rockefeller. Now, we heard this story about this couple that got married, the grandmother we're talking about, this 18-year-old girl, meets her future husband on the wrong side of the tracks, or the guy comes from the wrong side of the tracks. They were out to hear the big bands, is the story. That's the World War II modern feeling that you get in the Hollywood movies. People are dying overseas, and they're showing song and dance. And I'm not against music. Don't get me wrong. That's what I do. That's my specialty. But I'm speaking about the fact that they have to make a big production of this thing, just like a Hollywood movie. The story of those people being from Kansas is as real as Barack Obama being from Hawaii, or Kenya, for that matter. And I'm speaking from a position of having done enough research, and I'm finding overwhelming evidence that this dude is from Indonesia. And I call him a dude because he certainly can't be the president under the situation or the circumstances. Not what we deserve as a leader, let me tell you. We've not had such a leader for over 100 years, with possibly the exception of John F. Kennedy. You'd have to go all the way back to Abraham Lincoln, probably. There are a couple of others who were actually quite good at what they did. They didn't destroy the country like the last four have and are doing. And they're all still in there. They've all got their paws in there, into the banks, and into your private affairs, into your bank accounts, into all the public programs, all the things that we fund, they've stolen. Now, I'm hoping that I'm still on the air. I'm getting a message from someone that's telling me that I'm off the air. So if that is the case, let me know, Seth. And I'm going to leave Seth a little message. And I'm going to continue on. So we have this dichotomy of these people not being who they say they are. I've already written about this. This is published in the Three Stooges Go to Washington series, particularly parts 3 through 6, deal with the family and Barack Obama. Now, I don't know if we had a problem with me going off air or not. If you can let me know, Seth, I don't know if people heard everything I said here, but that's just the first step. First step is debunking this Hollywood movie story that we were told about who these people are, because they work for the CIA. And they lived in Oklahoma City. And if you read my articles, 3, 4, 5, and 6, you'll see that many of the things that have been portrayed as far as who Barack Obama is and who the mother is and who the family is, it's all lies. It's all lies, all of it. So I'm looking at one more chapter in this saga, and that is going to be about who I feel the real parents are, or at least the father. And it's going to surprise a lot of people, and some who study these things are going to say, why didn't I think of that? The evidence is overwhelming. Now, we're going to try to bring a surprise guest on here. I'm starting to feel that Jim Murray's not going to make it tonight. So I'm wondering, Seth, if you can look at your board and read this message that I'm leaving you here. We will try to bring our surprise guest on board. I just sent you the message who that is and how to get a hold of that person. So Seth is taking care of that. So this is live radio, folks. That's the beauty of the show, is we can bring a guest on almost at will. And so we're waiting for that connection to be made. And I'm sure Seth will pull it off here. It'll take us a moment. Well, what else is going on? Well, I reported last night that there were some shenanigans going on in Washington, D.C., in respect to the World Court being there. You're not hearing this on the mainstream media. It should interest you if you haven't tuned into the show the last couple of nights, that the World Court has actually been enforcing some financial payments that are due various countries from around the world. And it's been stolen. I brought out a small piece that I actually read yesterday. It was sort of an intelligence report that was describing all the chaos that was going on. A couple of journalists actually reported that Rahm Emanuel is sort of under a semi-house arrest, and that people who have been stealing the money have replaced it with counterfeit money. In fact, the story goes on to say that even some of the banks are giving out some kind of, what can I say, phony money. And this has been discovered. Now, whether they've actually given it out or they're intending to give it out just to, you know, cause the dollar to collapse totally, to just cause total chaos with the financial system, the problem that they have is that the international bankers don't want to see this money not be paid out, yet the international bankers here in the United States are part of the scam that the Federal Reserve is running, and this whole embezzlement thing, which is also occurring in the in the legislation that's going on, and in the stock markets, and there's all these payoffs and all this cover up of everything that's been going on. It's amazing. It's amazing that this is allowed to occur, and the people aren't seeing it, and the media is not reporting it because they're bribed and told not to, and they're infiltrated by the intelligence agencies telling them what to do. The media is a propaganda brainwashing tool. It's for mind control, and that's all it's for, is to divert your attention or to totally control you. That's all it's really for. There's nothing of substance coming from them. Nothing about the truth of what's going on. Why are they passing all of these bills, which are prohibiting people from talking like I'm talking right now? Why does that have to occur if there's nothing wrong? Why do they have to criminalize free speech? And Seth, we're going to try this method now, so I'm sending you the information you need. So we're hearing from a person who writes this piece, and wish I knew the person's name. I'd really compliment them. I don't have a website or anything where one could go to find out who it is. But I guess it doesn't really matter, because anybody who studied this subject knows that these are some of the issues. Now, we have this story that Barack Obama Sr. went to school in Hawaii, and I've more or less shown how the photograph is phony, the photograph of Barack Obama Sr. It is so ridiculous. I mean, there's people levitating in the photo. If you really look at the proportion of the bodies and where, how they're situated with each other, even the camera case that's sitting on this, what appears to be like a lot or something, a parking lot, a paved area. It even the surface they're standing on looks phony. It's got a tilt to it that's sort of like they're standing on a hill. And the shadows don't move in the right directions, and where there are shadows, and there's only a couple. Actually, there's like one guy in the front row that's got one finger that's casting a shadow. And then they sort of put shadows behind where they photoshopped these people into the picture. It's so obvious that that's what they did. And that's covered in the Three Stooges Part 6. Now, when you can debunk the photo that's supposed to represent the guy being in Hawaii, one can assume that he was never in Hawaii. We have no other proof that that person was listening. Now, I hate to say the surprise person's name, but Ken, if you can listen to your phone, we're trying to call you on your phone. And so let's try that. Try it again, Seth. If he's listening, he'll grab it and he'll join us. Oh my goodness. Well, so we have this story about Barack Obama, and then we have Stanley Ann Dunham, who's supposed to have been an anthropologist, and she writes this book about blacksmithing in Indonesia. I mean, she was no more interested in blacksmithing in Indonesia than you are for what she ate for breakfast. I mean, there's just no logical reason for anyone to make up that story. But it's kind of interesting, because we had now we tried that, Ken. I'm going to just say it to you. We tried that, and that didn't work. So I tried to conference you in, and I wasn't able to. For some reason, it just wasn't a possibility. So, Seth, if you can try that again, not the number, but the name, try that, and let's see if we can bring him on that way. He says he's there. Now, if it's not letting you call in, I don't know what else we can do. We just can't bring him on then. Anyway, so we have this other situation with Stanley Ann Dunham. Now, admittedly, he was giving out these micro loans. This is what they say. Do we really think that that's what was going on, or is it possible that she was dealing in drugs and bringing the cash or the drugs to the Bank of Hawaii, where her mother or her so-called mother worked? In fact, I looked at the family photos, and the family photos all look phony too. Not just the school photos, the family photos themselves. So this is Hollywood, or Hollyweird, as they call it there in California. They call it Hollyweird. It's amazing. And everything, now just stop for a second, because this thought came to mind. When Obama speaks, he's got to have a teleprompter. Without a teleprompter, the guy is in total la-la land. I saw this when he was asked if he was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and he lied about it. For one thing, he lied about it, and then for another thing, try again, Seth. We're trying to establish contact here, and hopefully okay. It's going to work. We have a surprise guest with us. This gentleman has a website. He was on very recently, in fact. Weren't you just on last night?
Yes.
You were. Well, he has a website called educate-yourself.org, and he's my emergency backup guest when a regular guest doesn't show up on Friday night. Mr. Ken Adachi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Don. Glad to be on again. I was going to listen to
the show. Were you feeling sorry for me here? Or?
Well, no, I just wanted to let you know that I'm here in case you wanted me to participate in the show. Of course, if Jim comes on board, then, you know, I'll just become a listener.
I was just bringing you on just to say hi, and then I was going to take you off.
Well, anyway.
No, I'm kidding.
There's plenty we can talk about. I mean, we could talk about science. I have a great deal of interest in many systems, but do you want to keep the conversation going along the lines that you began?
Yeah, just for a couple more minutes, because I've already devoted about 25 minutes or so to that. I got a couple more things to say. Well, we have this mother who's an anthropologist. She has this very, very strange life. Very strange life. We find a picture of her that likely was taken in Lebanon, added to a picture of her so-called father and her so-called mother. And, Ken, in fact, you saw that picture. And I'm speaking about the Stanley Ann Dunham photo with Stanley Armour and Madeline Dunham sitting on a love seat, where Stanley Ann is sitting on the armrest of the love seat.
Yes. Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And behind them is a window.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at that photo, the shadows go in different directions. They stop in midair.
Mm-hmm.
Belts cast shadows when worn around one's waist.
Yes.
I mean, I've never seen that. I can't get my belt to cast a shadow.
Right.
Well, unless I take it off and hold it up by a light, you know.
Right. Well, this photo you're talking about was one of the photos you just included in part six of the Three Stooges Go to Washington. And what you're elaborating on is that the bulk of the photos that the Obama camp put on the internet in the year leading up to the election, you're finding that many of them in his youth, you know, when he was a younger person, including his alleged mother and the claimed grandparents, that in fact they were created in some sort of photo editing program. And you've, just like the people who discovered that many of the NASA moon, you know, the first moon landing photos were in fact faked in a studio.
Mm-hmm.
So obvious once the people who spotted it put out some books and, you know, put this stuff on the internet, we actually looked at it. You can see the telltale signs, all the shadows in the wrong direction and from the wrong angle. This was all kind of, once somebody made you aware of it, and the same with these shots, once you told me, for example, the strangeness of this and that and the other thing, once you actually start looking at it, it becomes quickly obvious that these are faked photos. And you would think they must have their best people doing this. I don't know, CIA, NSA, who's ever does this fake work. And these people are falling down on the job. These are atrocious examples of faked photos. I mean, an amateur can spot this.
Yeah, it was sort of like the photography in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre in a way, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was bad. It was really bad. There were so many anomalies in there.
Right, right. So, I mean, I understand, you know. So, this one photo that you're referring to, she has a school uniform on. I don't know what the original photo where they claimed the shot was from. Did they put a date and a location with the photo? Do you recall?
Well, you're supposed to put two and two together. The story is that Stanley Armour joined the Army the day after Pearl Harbor was attacked. Okay, so
yeah,
he would have joined the Army on December 8th, 1941. Now that's to build up the patriotic image, right? And then they have him in this three-piece military shirt.
Right.
Part of which is, it looks like the top of a Van Heusen dress shirt, okay?
Right.
The pocket is a different kind of material, a different color material, and they conveniently have the little girl's shoulder frill on her dress. Sort of bleed into that pocket to hide the rest of the shirt, because you'd see it's a two-tone shirt. And so it makes it, and they obscure this in a shadow. Well, when I adjusted the exposure a little bit, it brightened the picture, and you could see that things were still in the shadows, even though all the light was up completely. In other words, I had brightened the shadows that were added to obscure the photo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the shadows again move in different directions. It's bad. Maybe Attack of the Killer Tomatoes is closer to the photography, since that's a black and white photo.
Yeah,
no, I mean it. And there's got to be some people out there that have seen those movies that are cracking up right now, because it's an underground hit. Okay, but it's awful production.
Right.
You know, it's very low budget. What do you expect?
Right.
Oh, and the script.
We've all seen it. I mean, that was,
you know, the script carried that movie.
During the 60s, you had a fair amount of those, you know, late 50s into the early mid 60s. You had a fair amount of those low budget cheapos.
Avant-garde.
Yes. It seems mostly out of California, you know, super low budget, but, and as you say, some of them become cult hits, you know, because they're so outrageous that, you know, people are laughing so much that.
Well, I had to draw some kind of analogy for those that haven't seen it. Of course, they can go to my website, directlightproductions.com, click on articles, and then click on the Three Stooges Go to Washington, Part 6. Mm-hmm. And it will give you everything that you need. Now, we've got a call. We weren't really planning on taking any calls, but since you're a surprise guest, we can take a surprise call. How's that?
Okay.
Okay, we've got Greg in Seattle on the line. Greg, do you have a question or a comment for me or my guest, Ken Adachi?
Sure, Don. We talked about 2 weeks ago, and you told me to read your part.
Well, Greg's not saying very much. Greg, are you with us?
Yeah, can you hear me better now? Hello?
Well, I guess Greg is not there. Well, if he comes back, let us know. We'll think about it.
Hello?
Okay, you got your reprieve there, Ken.
Okay.
Anyway, and then the head of this little girl is almost as large as the so-called father. Okay, we're looking at like an 18-month-old little girl, and her head is too big for her body. It looks like it's photoshopped on there, and they've disguised it with a little shadow underneath the chin.
Right.
I mean, how many babies do you see casting a shadow in the front of their body when a picture is taken with a flash, okay?
Right.
And in fact, the shirt, which is in direct line with the same flash, is casting a shadow as if the light is from the left side only, but the little girl is blocking that light. So how is a shadow creating another shadow?
Right.
It's
to clarify, the photo you're talking about is when she's Stanley Ann, the claimed mother. She's a child in this photo. What would you guess me? Two years old, perhaps?
No, I'm saying about 18 months.
Okay.
Between a year and 18 months. But then again, you're not even looking at a whole person. You're looking at a Photoshop.
Right.
Really,
right.
That thing's only a year old, you know.
Right. But what is one of the many incongruent things you discovered in that photo is right. You have a 1.5-year-old child. If you look at that photo, if we were to believe the photo was genuine, she's sitting directly in front of the grandmother and the grandfather. She's sitting directly in front of her. Yet the child's head, I need to emphasize this, is physically larger than the mother's head. I mean, it's so obvious that this image was inserted into the...
And so was Stanley Armour Dunham's head,
yes,
which is why they shadowed it.
Yeah. Right, right. Stanley, they have him in a uniform because he's supposed to be this wonderful patriot who jumped right into the military right after
Sergeant,
Pearl
Harbor. Sergeant Stanley, I call him.
Sergeant Stanley. And so they had to, you know, put him in a military uniform. So they did. They just morphed his head into the photo. It's quite obvious when you are aware that it's a doctor's photo. Then you can enlarge it. You can change the contrast. And then all kinds of anomalies show up. Gaps show up where they should not be in a genuine photo. I mean, it's really a very good find on your part.
And yeah.
I thought you were doing... Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was pretty hooked with the photo that of Lolo Sotoro on the bench with Stanley and Maya and 10-year-old Barack. I was pretty happy with that one. What was revealed there, but you know, you've now opened up, you know, a new gold mine with these additional photos that are, and all of his supposed school photos, they're all faked.
And so are the African photos.
Exactly. And this is what gets me. It's so poorly done. I mean, you said it yourself, but, you know, we're not supposed to be able, this is supposed to be seamless. These people have multi-billion dollar budgets behind them. They have the highest tech instrumentation in the world. How is it they do such a poor job on this? It's mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but no one else did this research. No one else brought this topic up.
No.
In the whole world.
That's absolutely right. So you deserve full credit for tuning in on this one.
Now that people are seeing it, okay, and our caller is back, so maybe he's going to comment about this, okay? We'll bring him on for a short bit here. Greg, are you back with us?
Yeah, hey, Don. How you doing? Can you hear me all
right? I'm good. How are you?
Fine. Yeah. I called a couple of weeks ago, and you suggested to read your part 6 on the Stooges, so I did, and I found it fascinating. There's three things I'll comment on, which will verify everything you guys have already said. The when Stanley's tie is casting shadows, I've looked at a lot of the Apollo stuff, too. I'm really into that, and I think he did a great job on it, and I can see a hoax there. When he's sitting on the bench in Central Park, he has two hands. I mean, his shoulder should be up at a certain point where it's not, and then it's resting weirdly on Barack or whatever name he wants to use his shoulder. And then the wedding band on his hand is like a 10-year anomaly, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's three things I got to give you kudos for, and I'm not into the pixels and all that. That's a little bit beyond me, but I mean, I read the whole thing. I've read a lot of the stuff you've done, and that was great work.
Well, the scientific explanation is kind of a primer. It's by no means high tech, but for people that just aren't interested in that, it may seem dry, but if you read it with the intent of trying to picture what I'm saying, when you get to the photos, mm-hmm. you see this right away. You see
oh,
all
yeah.
the things that I've described.
There's no doubt about it. Hey, I had one other question. Maybe you two guys can, as I'm reading your whole thing, you know, my mind goes a million different ways, and so I come up with a bunch of questions. Here's something I thought would be pretty interesting, because I've never heard anybody comment on this. Where are Barack's friends from age? I coach basketball, okay, so I'm kind of, where are the guys who played basketball with him, were on his team, coaches on other teams, you know, anybody from his childhood? He said he played basketball. He said he played sports. Where are his childhood friends who can all verify that from ages, you would know better than I, what would be interesting, from 8 to 12 to 15? I don't know.
Well, you'd have to ask the guy that did the composite photo about that. That's the only guy you could go to.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? You and I, who doesn't have 6 million childhood friends? Where are his? Has anybody ever stepped up in articles or a sentence anywhere in Newsweek quoted or attributed to a friend?
No, no, I haven't seen one. Now they have staged some articles, you know. They've staged a woman in San Diego or, you know, showing her yearbook. Well, they show you a book, what looks like a book. It actually looks like a magazine. Doesn't look like a hardbound yearbook. And there's this funky looking picture of him, black and white, of his so-called graduation photo. They've got that in there. And that's all you can see.
Oh,
that's all you can make out.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Those are the things that pop into my mind. Where's the closing coach somewhere? You know, he went and did the Final Four 64 bracket for ESPN. Why didn't they go to some guy he played against and say, what kind of jumper did Barack have? I mean, wouldn't that be pretty cool?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, if I had the time and the means to do it, I would be there doing that, but I think what I show in the picture shows that it doesn't matter, you see, because you can't prove a lie, okay? You can only show that it's a lie. You can't prove the lie because it's made up. It doesn't have any substance, if you get my point.
Have you ever shown any of the stuff to the press? I mean, they won't touch it.
The whole world's seeing it. It's on the internet.
The New York Times or the Washington Post, or nobody would touch it. That's what's sickening about our society now.
Well, that's because you're bribed. Do you have a question for Ken, by any chance, Greg?
No, I'll let you guys go. I just wanted to tell you, you know, you said get back to you if you read the thing and looked at the pictures, and I did. Mm-hmm. I went right to it that night, and I just hadn't had time to get back to you. I had a little bit of time tonight, so I just wanted to thank you for your work, and I believe 100%
that
the guy's a fart. All right, my man. You guys have a good night.
You can help us out by letting your friends know about it. You know, that's the best thing to do.
No, so. I agree. I forwarded a bunch of this stuff around.
Okay, well, you have yourself a good night and a great weekend, and call us again.
Okay, you too, Don.
Okay.
Okay, Ken, you take care, too. All
right,
bye-bye.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, okay, there's somebody that just found this out from reading the article, and you see he's confirming what we're saying.
Yes.
Even what you're saying. Now, so we even know that the Stanley Armour head was photoshopped onto that picture, but then this appears over and over again, doesn't it? As I wrote in the article, and
right.
I'd like you to share some of the stuff that you found in the Notre Dame de Jamour picture, which is this window behind the three of them sitting on the love seat, and when I lightened the photo, you could see what's outside.
Right. Okay. So, the photo you're talking about shows Stanley Ann, the claimed mother of Barack. She's a girl. It looks like she's attending high school. She has what looks like a high school uniform on. She's sitting on a couch in what looks like a day room of like a dormitory, a school dorm. School dorm has that look to it. And you get the grants are visiting their granddaughter at the school that she's staying at. It looks like it's a private school. Now, I don't know if when the Obama people made the photo available on the internet, what the caption says. For instance, I don't know if they claimed that this location is such and such, the year is such and such.
Nothing.
That part.
Nothing.
Okay, zero. Yeah. Okay. What you did, though, is you looked at the uniform and you saw there was initials on the uniform. And you did some digging. And you came to the conclusion, in fact, that she was going to a school in Lebanon. And that the name of the school was a Jesuit school, which, again, tell me the name of it.
Notre Dame de Jamour.
Okay, Notre Dame de Jamour.
And that's in Beirut, Lebanon.
Beirut, Lebanon, right. Now, you found a lot of instances in which the CIA and CIA operatives and families tended to have things occur in Lebanon, particularly Beirut. I guess the photo is dated when, late 50s?
Well, I'm saying it's 1952 to 1954.
Okay.
She could be, I get the sense that she's from 10 to 12 years old in that picture.
Okay.
It's difficult to say because it's a Photoshop, you know.
Right. Okay. I got
it. So it's telling a story. It's representing mm-hmm. something, you see.
But there is a glass window behind them. It has multiple panes in it. The photo looks like it's been taken at night with artificial lighting. And when you change the contrast ratio of the photo, which is one of the things you can do once you digitize the photo and put it in a program like Photoshop, you can change all kinds of parameters, including the contrast and brightness. And when you increase the brightness and change the contrast, you could see images of what looks like entities in the windows. And once they are enlarged and much filtering is applied to them to invert the image, for instance, to run it through various filters that are available in Photoshop, one of them being called Solarize, which often will bring out detail that you otherwise might not see. You can see these greater clarity and greater definition. So what I told you I would be doing is I would crop those out for you and define them as sharply as I can using Photoshop, and then you're going to add those to the story. Now, I recently put up an article about a month ago, when Barack and Obama had just landed at Heathrow Airport in England at the beginning of that conference, G20, whatever it was. It seems to me from the beginning of April, I believe, when they landed there. And one of the photos that was published on the Internet by an Internet magazine called USA Magazine,
yeah.
One of the photos showed Michelle and Barack leaving Air Force One and entering the ramp that they would normally walk down, the shot was taken at night, so there's a lot of artificial lighting. Whoever took the photo had to be shooting through some sort of see-through shield. It was either glass or plastic, probably plastic, I'm guessing, like Lucite, for instance, which could be crystal clear, and yet, you know, it's bulletproof and all that. So that created reflections in the photo. And what I noticed, this reader had sent the photo to me and said, look at the eyes of these two. And the eyes really looked completely abnormal. And when I enlarged them, you know, there was a lot of abnormalities to the appearance of the eyes. But more than that, a great deal of manifestations of what I'm calling etheric images were revealed on the exposed skin of Michelle particularly, but also the face of Barack as well as the face of Michelle. And in the area, in their immediate surrounding area, which you might call their surrounding aura area, there was a number of entities that showed up. It wasn't that hard to see. And once you enlarged the photo and changed the contrast, they became much more defined, and it's pretty startling what was there. So it seems
Not optical illusions.
No, absolutely not. Who's ever, you know, I don't know if anyone has claimed that, but no, not at all. These are simply magnifications of the photo that's published on the internet. I'm simply magnifying it. That's all I'm doing. I'm cropping out an image and I'm enlarging it. And in some cases, to make the etheric image more pronounced, then I'm changing the contrast and brightness and other parameters of the digitized photo to try to sharpen detail. But that's all I'm doing. I'm not inserting anything. I'm just, changing the balance of light and dark and all that to try to make the image
to show detail.
Reveal sharper detail. Well, that's all I'm doing. And there's a lot of very distinct looking images. Some of them alien looking. Some of them sort of a cross between, you know, some sort of demonic gargoyle like face and a
puppy.
Right. There's typically in these etheric images a very mixed bag. You'll find faces that look very human, almost like a photo, a portrait of a human being, no weirdness at all to it. In other cases, we'll find faces that look rather cartoonish, look almost as if they're a drawing from a children's cartoon. In other cases, you'll see what definitely looks like either reptilian heads, you know, typical green, scaly-looking eyes, snout, etc., or you'll even see gray-like heads. There was at least one gray in this photo.
And there's that photo I call Jack and Bobby, which is
that's right.
It looks like Robert F. Kennedy and John F. Kennedy side by side.
So, all right. So what we're emphasizing here is that with other photos that I had enlarged of Barack, particularly when he was 10 years old with the Lolo Sotoro and his mother sitting on a bench, which supposedly was taken in Indonesia, there are etheric entities all over Barack's exposed body, his knees, his arms, his hands. And anyone who has Photoshop can take the same photo that I took, or the one that I got. You know, I took it off Rents.com when they first ran it up there, you know, a year or so ago when they were running in the primaries, and they wanted to paint this picture of this, you know, fine lad and his Kenyan father and mother and blah, blah, blah. So I simply, you colorized the photo, which put out a lot more detail.
All I did was it wasn't so much that I colorized it.
You reinstalled the color that was taken out of it.
I restored the color just by moving one knob on a picture viewer. It wasn't even Photoshop.
Right.
It's just a basic picture viewing program.
Right. So
and it was, you know, because I sensed that photo had the characteristics of a color photo. As I looked at it, I said, this isn't a black and white photo. And I just increased the saturation, which had the color saturation had been driven to zero. And I brought it up and there it was.
With all the colors faithful, right.
Yeah.
And yes, I agree with you. If anyone does this, I mean, it's easy to do this when you have a program like Photoshop. You can take a color photo and hit one filter that's called desaturate and it removes all the color. But there's a texture difference between a genuine black and white photo and a color photo that was desaturated. And I agree with you. I, too, can sense the difference between a desaturated color photo and a genuine black and white. And your eye and mine can pick that up. At least most people, I think, can detect that.
Yes.
So by reinserting the color, though, that made a huge difference. There's an entity on the wall just behind Barack, just behind him, you know, off his left arm. It's so obvious when you colorize reintroduce the color on the photo. It pops right out because
it has what looks like a white headband on it. And it has very distinct eyes. It almost looks like a Mayan type of, figure or icon that you might see in a Mayan runes. Mm-hmm. It just pops right out at you instantly. Why they were so stupid as to allow that part to be cropped into the photo, I have no idea. But, thankfully for the rest, they did it. I mean, it's an entity. It's so obvious.
The chance was about 1 in 7 billion that somebody would find it, and they did. they played the odds, and they lost.
Mm-hmm.
They lost. And right. It's the documents, and it's the story, and it's the pictures, and it's what's going on in Washington now. So there's really no difference. I mean, don't expect to find some integrity anywhere.
Right.
It's not going to be there.
So what I'm leading up to, though, is that in many of their photos, I'm talking about Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, there's no doubt in my mind that they're human-alien hybrids because they manifest these etheric images, which is what the reptilians do. Now, we've had other individuals who have been identified as being similar human-reptilian hybrids who, on examination of photos and enlargement crops, you see these entities appearing either on the skin of the person or in the surrounding area immediately around the person. We, a year and a half or 2 years, probably 2 years ago now, I put up a photo called Mysterious Person from a 1944 wartime photograph. And I obtained this photo from the group that Eric O'Ryan had put out in his book, The Bush Connection. And it shows a picture of a then 20-something, what age was he now? He supposedly...
No, he entered the Air Force at 17. He forged his birth certificate.
Yeah, he forged it, right.
Yeah,
right. So his actual age at that time, that was 1944. So his official bio says he was born in 24. So according to his official bio, he's 20 years old in this photo. He's standing on the deck of an aircraft carrier in the Pacific, posing with two other airmen. Navy flyers, Bush Sr. flew a Navy torpedo, a small torpedo bomber during the war. And anyway, he's standing with his radio man and his, what was the job? One was a radio man. The other must have been a...
the other was the gunner.
Gunner, okay.
Yeah, the other was a gunner.
Okay, so it was a three-man crew that went on these little torpedo bombers that,
Mm-hmm. Now, there's an important... Are you still with us, Ken? Okay, I'm not hearing Ken, so he might have disappeared momentarily. Okay, I think we're trying to bring him back. Seth, if you're following this, we lost Ken. Anyway, I'll continue on here.
I'm here.
Oh, you're with us. Okay, great. I was going to mention, I think the guy's name was Chester Majewski, was the pilot, or not the pilot, he was the gunner of the plane that was directly in front of Bush's plane.
Correct,
Bush, the story is that he underwent all this fire, and he ejected from the plane, and he did
two
eject
other
from
crewmen.
Yeah, the crewmen were left in the plane. Yeah,
right.
So they went down.
Yep.
Now the gunner in the plane in front swears that there was no fire. They were not under any kind of fire whatsoever. So in essence, what George Bush Sr. did was just jump out of the plane. He ejected himself from the plane, and the plane crashed.
And what it looks like, Chester Majewski lived to tell the story after the war, and he reported this, many decades later. He told the story of what happened that day. Bush Sr.'s cover story is that his plane was hit by enemy fire, and he had no choice but to eject. and he tried to save the other airmen but couldn't. That's essentially his story. It's bogus. Majewski is flying in the plane directly in front of Bush. They're flying in formation. They're returning. Let me get it straight now. I think they're returning. Excuse me. Are they returning from the bombing run? When they were on a bombing run on a small island, they had no opposition. There was no anti-aircraft there. There was no Japanese planes to engage them in the air. They had no opposition that day. They went on a small bombing run to an island called Ichijima. And I think they were on the return to the aircraft carrier. They at no time were under fire. Majewski says that he saw smoke erupting from the cockpit of Bush's plane. And a moment later, Bush bails out and the plane goes straight down, takes a nosedive into the water below. And what you have to assume is that there was no fire. Bush, being a infiltrator born in Germany, probably is responsible for sabotaging the plane so it would go down. Why? Entirely possible the Germans wanted the plane so they can get the sighting equipment. There was certain the Allies had developed, this is 1944 now, had developed more advanced bombing device that, in other words, they could get the target much more accurately than the Germans. And the Germans were anxious to get those bombing instruments. And it's entirely possible that the Germans wanted it. There was a German sub.
And a cargo ship, too.
Right. That could have well had obtained the plane. And, of course, Bush Sr. was miraculously saved by a U.S. submarine that just happened to be in the area, the U.S. Finn. I'm trying to remember the name of the boat. The whole thing smells like a setup. It seems that the Germans probably grabbed the ship that Bush probably sabotaged and sent into the drink, because his Majewski, for instance, says that plane is capable of a water landing.
Yeah.
Had attempted, yeah, he could have taken it down to the water level, landed it on the water, and then all three of them could have been rescued. But that wasn't his mission. His mission was to sabotage the plane.
Now, most important is that Majewski's testimony about what he saw on that day corroborates Otto Skorzeny's story.
Exactly. In the same year, I'm thinking this is 2007, that I put up that 1944 photo and I found the entity. Mm-hmm. I never did mention that, but there is a very distinct etheric entity right next to Bush's head in the 1944 photo that obviously was made with film and, you know, printed on regular print film paper. And yet this entity still shows up in this photo. It's amazing. Very highly detailed entity, sort of a human looking face, but very sad looking individual. But he's right there in Bush's aura. And what we're talking about is that these human reptilian hybrids tend to carry this baggage with them of these etheric entities that show up in their aura, in their immediate environment, in their space around them, as well as on their skin. In certain photos, not every photo, but when the lighting is right, when the emotional reaction of the person, of the shapeshifter is right, when a number of things are right, you'll get this phenomena that will manifest itself.
No. You know what? You know, I thought of something. If I can interrupt for a moment, you know how Superman was sort of allergic to kryptonite.
Yes.
I think the reptilians are allergic to Photoshop.
It could be.
Okay, I just wanted to wanted to add that as the thought entered my mind.
Yeah, it's a remarkable thing, and anybody can do this. It's you know, you don't have to wait for me to put it up. A, I'm not an expert in Photoshop. I've never studied it at all. I was just a typical guy. I got the idea from Barbara Krause Brown, who I've mentioned to you in talks before. This lady has been using Photoshop to enlarge and show details of reptilian details in many famous politicians, etc. She's been doing this for years. She has a website, WeolawaPress.com. I have her linked on my website. She gave me the idea. It never occurred to me, but so I was reading what she was doing. I have Photoshop on my computer.
Yeah.
So I just tried it myself, and it's just, you know, just trial and error. I'm trying different filters and just see what they do. So I'm not a, you know, I'm just an amateur. If I can do it, anybody can do it. And people should. If you're hearing the show, if you're hearing the archives, grab these photos of Obama, in which you can, particularly if you notice in the photos, if his skin looks bumpy, that's a telltale. He's partly shifting there.
Mm-hmm.
His skin appears bumpy. Enlarge the thing tremendously and look very close and see what you see.
Well, you got to see one that I got recently. I haven't shown that to anyone yet. It's on the web. It can be found, and it's a photo. I think it was taken by the Chicago Sun-Times, showing him praying in the Trinity Church there in Chicago.
Yeah,
and he's you know, when a person grits their teeth real hard, you can see the hinge of their jaw sometimes juts out on certain individuals.
Right.
Well,
right.
He's got some jutting out there, but it's a head. Okay. It's literally a physical head.
Oh, Lord.
That starts protruding. So
yeah.
There's eyes, nose, mouth, ears, the whole thing. But this is an interesting one. You are going to get a kick out of this.
Yeah. If you recall, on the YouTube videos, I put a couple on my website, plenty up there. Anyone who goes to the number of posted YouTube videos in which you see well-known people. It could be TV personalities, news reporters. Well-known people will be doing an interview or something and just talking normally on television, of course. And you'll start seeing very dramatic morphing of their head, usually.
And the accompanying audio track to go along with that, too. Because the producers are telling them, you're changing.
Right, telling them you're morphing. And this happens a lot on, there's that Fox
11
program. Fox 11, that morning program with Steve somebody, and I forget his
name. Steve Edwards.
Steve Edwards and the gals that are with him, they're all shapeshifters. I mean, they're
Jillian
all...
Jillian Barbary, Dorothy Lucy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Plus the people who they have, you know, doing field reports and so forth. They're all shapeshifters. They're all reptilian, human, alien hybrids. And they've been captured on these video segments morphing. And it's very dramatic. And sometimes the weirdness of the morphing, it's something like out of the movies. It gets grotesque, so it doesn't bother me at all. But people who look at it, you know, be prepared for it and don't be frightened by it. There's nothing to be frightened by an image, no matter how unhuman they might morph into. There's nothing to be frightened about. But be prepared for it. You're not going to see a slight twitching of the face. You're going to see gross distortions of the face. Gross distortions.
See, and in my article, I describe how the camera can capture that, and where because cameras often can capture light that the eyes can't see, and yet when it's put on film or when it's even reproduced digitally, it produces exactly what the camera saw. So
exactly.
you have an opportunity to see this, and in some of these videos. They're very well made where they stop the action. They freeze frame it and let you look at the image, and then they show it at quarter speed or half speed, and then you can see how it's happening. And it happens it happens where you get the attention that the person is totally engrossed in something else and they're not really focusing on maintaining control. And then everyone starts using the word change. Why are you changing? Oh, no, don't change. Don't change.
Yeah, exactly. It's code to try to tip them off. They're shape-shifting.
Yeah.
I even saw you probably saw the same video, but about a year or two years ago, I'm not sure, Bush was still in office, and his daughter, Jenna, was pushing a book that, you know, quote, she wrote. I mean, who knows? But the point is she shape-shifted during this Fox News interview. And that's also on YouTube. I presume it's still there. And they're trying to tell her, you know, while she's, but they're switching cameras to another shot. You know, they're switching back to Steve Edwards and they're trying to send her these codes, as you say, change and so forth. It's so obvious. So not only can, you know, we see it on YouTube, but everyone in the studio could see it as it was happening in real time and they're trying to scramble it. So apparently, you know, the whole staff there, the camera people, they must all be aware that these people are shapeshifters. There's no other conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Or they're shapeshifters themselves. You know?
Exactly. Because there is a this reporter, he's a black man. His name is what's his name? Miller. His last name is Miller. Michael Miller, I think. I think that's it, anyway. About 2 years ago, got a YouTube clip of him. This guy is morphing tremendously, and the cameraman, he's doing a remote shot from a school somewhere in Southern California. He's talking about a school. It's in the evening. The school's in the background behind him, and he's trying to do this report about, you know, there was an incident with a guard and arrested, you know, a high school girl there over a nothing incident. Anyway, that was the report. He's morphing though. His head, just like it was in the movie, starts bubbling outwards. You know, what looks like bumps on his head begin to bubble outward, and he's changing so rapidly and so fast. The cameraman's motioning to him. So this guy, again, I think his name is Miller, Michael Miller, although I'm not absolutely sure. He walks off camera while he's doing the report. In other words, instead of staying in front of the camera, the cameraman must be frantically motioning with him that he's shifting, shape-shifting. So he continues to verbally do the report, but he walks off camera so you just see the school in the background. That
you see the wall. There's a little 2 or 3 foot high wall there, too.
Thank you. There's a wall there. And then once he can recover from the shifting, he's suddenly back on camera again, and then within seconds he starts dissolving into this reptilian form again, and he has to walk off again. It's the most amazing clip, and he keeps on talking as if nothing unusual is going on. So I still see him do reports every time I see him. I think of that video clip, and so there's a very large number of people in the public eye, politicians, particularly Fox News people, they are human alien, hybrids. They are not strictly human beings. They are these shapeshifters. There's a lot of them out there. We're not talking a small number here. A lot of them.
Yeah, and you see this sometimes in entertainers, too.
Yes.
There's a particular singer who I'm not going to mention yet because I'm studying some video, but it's gonna blow some minds. You know, you get that feeling like I'm not looking at a person here. This outwardly it seems like a normal person, and anyone who's studied this to any extent knows exactly what we're talking about, Ken. This is, you know, it's beyond being concerned if anyone thinks you're crazy, because when you see it and you've seen it a number of times and it's even the eyes, if just seeing the eyes transform, sometimes that's the first thing someone sees.
Yes, I've gotten emails from people who have seen other individuals that they knew, they thought they were, particularly from Illuminati families,
and they would tell me, I saw their eyes go completely black. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. And, you know, what's that all about? Well, it's obvious what it's about. I tell, well, they're one of these alien reptilian hybrids, I think we've talked about this before, but since we're talking about it, why are so many of them, you know, revealing these characteristics? And I'm speculating at this, but what I got from Phil Schneider's talk when he was still alive in 1995, and what I particularly got from Arizona Wilder is that they need to have a substance, these hybrids, to maintain the human appearance, and that substance is human blood. And there is a component of the blood of the victim is terrorized before he's sacrificed at these rituals, these satanic rituals. And in the process of terrorizing the individual, they are secreting into their bloodstream something called adrenal chrome. You know, you know, if you get frightened or scared, that normally you excrete a lot of adrenaline. Well, this adrenal chrome is the substance that these alien human hybrids first they use. I'm told, you know, Arizona says they, to them it's like cocaine. So apparently it produces some sort of euphoric, pleasurable experience for them. But beyond that, it apparently is like an elixir that helps them hold the human form, and that is it's because the planet's frequency is increasing, perhaps. But she says they need it more often now than in earlier times. So in order to hold their shape, they need to drink this adrenal chrome laden blood more frequently, or they'll tend to shift into the. So that might be happening. That might be happening. Maybe the frequency of the planet is going up, and they have to work harder to hold the human form. I mean, I don't know. I'm just guessing wildly here, but
well, I think it's been there a long time. It's just that the more advanced technology makes it much more visible. But I'm agreeing with what she said, because that's my take on it too. When you ask me why is this one shape shifting, I said they need to be fed. You know,
yeah, you
it's lunchtime.
long flight. You know, they haven't been fed. So they come bopping out of the plane, and the two of them are shifting right then and there. It's amazing.
Yeah, and you didn't take the photograph, and I didn't take that photograph. It was a member of the British media, or there in England anyway.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
You know, it's and for some reason, somebody, you know, in their hurry to get that photo out, decided that it didn't need to be edited at all. Mm-hmm. And you actually have a woman standing there with two different colored legs.
Yep. I feel that the see-through shield helped produce the anomalies in that photo because of the, who knows, you know, but somehow the reflection of light back and forth. You know, obviously there's a lot of artificial light on them. There's a lot of spotlights, I'm assuming, on them.
Yeah.
And what's happening is that the light is bouncing off the plane, which is, you know, light colored.
Mm-hmm.
It's blue, and the lower half is kind of a light tan, and then it's a white. So it's bouncing off the plane. It's hitting that see-through shield. Then it's bouncing back to the Obamas in the plane. In other words, the light's reverberating back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
very rapidly,
that helped. Yes, I think that helped bring out all those images, because that's startling what shows up on her legs. You see how distinct the entities that show up on her legs, you know, are.
Even Jack and Bobby Kennedy, you know.
So I believe that somehow played into it. If that shield wasn't there, we probably wouldn't have seen that detail.
Well,
so that was kind of a fortuitous thing. Yeah,
we've covered a gamut of those photos, and there are more that certainly that we could discuss, but the point is that between the seniors photo, I was talking about that before you joined us this evening, and I'm very appreciative that you did too. We got a few laughs. The whole story, and the lack of documentation, okay, it lacks because it's all made up. Mm-hmm. It's nothing but a big lie. And people expect someone's going to go to Hawaii and find a legitimate document. We've got the pictures from Hawaii. They don't fit. You can't create a document to fit those pictures.
Mm-hmm.
The school picture, where it's a group of girls standing along a hedge and there's a lawn in front of them, and these girls, have a row of guys crouching down in front of them, and the guys are 25 to 50% too large.
Yes, you're talking about school in Hawaii. That's
yeah, the Punahou school.
He's supposedly posing with his classes.
And
right?
It's another one of those. No one's casting a proper shadow, but there's a huge black shadow behind everybody.
Right.
Even the light. The light gaps don't cancel out that shadow. I mean, it's ridiculous what they did.
It is.
It's horrible. Yeah. And if you really put it into perspective and look at the size of the bodies, I made the comment you could fit an Olympic pool width-wise in between them. That's how lacking the depth of field is in that photo.
Yes, 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 yes.
No one really looked at it. You know, they see, oh, there's Barack Obama. Yeah, he's at school. Boom, they go to the next picture.
Exactly, right.
And
that's the way most people would treat it. Right.
Yeah, I spent hours on every one. And
yep.
As I found things that didn't make sense, and I looked and I said, wait a minute, these are all photoshopped in there. All of these people. None of these people. Yeah.
Exist.
Mm-hmm. They're just compilations. Yeah.
Compilations.
And that's done.
It's a very.
I was going to say it's done in Photoshop using a layering technique. That's all it is.
Yep.
But they have to then create a new photo of the one with the new layer. And then they go and they add the next one until they get that right. So as this thing is being compiled, all kinds of anomalies start appearing. Distortion.
Right.
Video noise, and they have to mask it constantly with the lighting.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all phony. Even the graduation picture, that one gets me because it looks like something surreal. They make him look like King Kong standing in front of movie theater screen.
Yes. Yep.
You know, this overly sized image is in the foreground, and everyone is just this little speck in the background.
Yeah.
And no one's even paying attention. None of the things that are going on with the lights are affecting certain parts of his body. He's got his hand extended, and his head is drowning in this red light, and yet his hand has no red on it. In fact, his hand is multiple colors.
and
he's wearing a dress shirt on top, and on the bottom it looks like a t-shirt.
Yes. Yes, I know. It's really wonderful that you identify this. It'll naturally mainstream will never, as Greg said, will never touch this. But it doesn't matter if they do. I think you'll get more and more attention to it via the internet. So by just talking about it through your show, and other people will pick it up. It'll start showing up on blogs and so forth. It'll become more common. I mean, if people would just read the story that you put up and look carefully themselves at the photo, invest the same sort of time that you did, and you don't even have these photo editing programs like I have.
No. Basically, all I did was try to take some aspect of the picture to make it more visible instead of obscured.
Right.
You know, they're the darkest set of photos I think I've ever seen on the internet. Mm-hmm. They show shadows in direct sunlight. I mean, total sunlight. And then at night with the flash unit, there's only one finger. Is a shadow, Barack Senior's picture. and they put 20 leis around his neck to make it look like it's a send-off. It is so phony. Oh, and the sailor, the pregnant woman and the sailor who are levitating.
Yeah. They just layered in images, right?
Yeah.
And it's surprising. You would think, you know, considering the people who are behind, you know, we have the top of the American Illuminati, the Rockefeller Empire, you know, who's are the, you know, the main people, you know, funding, and, you know, Barack's a put up job from the Rockefellers. And, you would think, you know, with all the expertise and money they have in their command, they would, have people with more competence than this. This is shameful. I mean, if I was in that business, I just couldn't show my face. These people have limitless funding and limitless technology at their beck and call. How they can do such a poor job of it amazes me.
Well, the odds were 7 billion to 1 that anybody would find it.
You hit it. It's amazing. It really is amazing. The whole saga of this man, his genealogy is completely fabricated. His photo, quote, history, as sparse as it is, fabricated, and poorly so. The man was not born in the United States. That's clear. It should be evident to anyone who still retains the power of reason. If he was born in Hawaii, he would have produced the birth certificate.
I think I've lost Ken.
Am I here?
Yeah. Oh, now you're here. Yeah. Are you opening up other programs?
No, I'm not doing anything. I'm just sitting here and talking. So I have no idea. But anyway,
for a moment.
I lost my train of thought.
You were saying he would have produced a birth certificate, and then.
Yeah, I mean, you said it many times, and you know, in writing and in shows, and we need to keep on repeating this. This is the most basic explanation for people who don't want to, you know, read all the data. I mean, the articles make it clear that the man was not born in the United States. It's so obvious, but a simple application of second grade reasoning, you know, a seven-year-old reasoning capability can fathom the notion that if he had a genuine birth certificate, he would have produced it at the very beginning, and the issue never would have risen. The fact that he consistently has not produced it makes it clear to, you know, to a seventh, you know, a seven-year-old person that the man is obviously doesn't have the documents to produce. So then they get some total, you know, sold out excuse for a governor, which, you know, they're all sellouts anyways. There's nothing unusual in Hawaii who will prompt that, oh, I've seen it and I can guarantee it's the real. Okay, yeah. Well, show it to us if you've seen it. Oh, well, we have privacy reasons. And the man is required by the Constitution to be a native-born citizen. He's required to show it. You and I need to show a birth certificate when we want to get a Social Security card, when we want to get a passport, when we want to get a driver's license. We have to show a birth certificate. Why does this man, who can't produce a birth certificate, why is he president of the United States? He should be up on charges for fraudulently posing as a senator.
And you know, that while he had, actually, for 17 years, he had parking tickets. For 17 years. In Somerville, Massachusetts.
Yes.
17 years. You go 17 hours without paying a parking ticket, and they throw you in jail.
Right.
No,
because he's obviously
A stooge.
He knows
he's stooge number two.
And he knows he's above the law, so that's why he does things like that without fear of consequence.
Mm-hmm.
When it came time that he's running for president, oh, let's just take care of the park, of the parking tickets. You know, they're just, it's just taken care of. Just like his Selective Service paperwork is just taken care of, and
mm-hmm.
he has no records of any schools. He's supposed to be this, you know, Harvard Constitution professor. Please, the students who taught, who were in his classes, please produce the records of when he taught on what dates. Please produce his transcript. They can't produce, they don't produce anything. They're just telling us he was a law professor, yet there's no proof of his attending any of these schools. There's no proof of anything. Anyone else would be, you know, required to produce their school transcripts. He produces nothing. They just stonewall the public. They don't answer the charges. And, of course, the media, the mainstream, never brings it up. And they just pretend like it's a non-issue.
They've been doing that
since he got elected.
I don't know if you read the introductory piece that I wrote. It was sort of a heads up that this genealogy study was coming along at the Idaho Observer, and we released a piece with the Three Stooges, and we named them McCurley, Mobama, and Hillary.
That's good. Oh, that's funny.
That's on my articles page. That's the first of the Three Stooges articles.
Oh man, I gotta reread that. That is funny.
David Dees did the photo for us. Now that is a Photoshop creation.
Right.
Intentionally. Yeah. We had McCurley, who was McCain, Mo Obama, that's self explanatory, and Hillary. Oh, and that was on the front page of the Idaho Observer, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, I don't see the hard copy, so I'm only reading the internet version, you know. But
yeah.
That's wonderful.
Well, I mean, this is the sad state of affairs, yet to keep our sanity, we have to laugh, you know.
Well, yeah, of course, you know, of course, you got to handle this in a way that you just can't respond with unending,
vitriol.
Yeah, vitriol. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't work. I mean, we're staring at unprecedented illegality, unprecedented criminal behavior, and an unprecedented fraud in the entire history of this country. Nothing on this magnitude has ever occurred in our entire history. I mean, I suppose most of the presidents of the 20th century, at least, was pretty clear, at least starting from Garfield forward, I should say post-Garfield, because he was, you know, taken out by the Illuminati because he wasn't playing ball. But let's say from Teddy Roosevelt forward, you know.
Yeah, they took McKinley out right before him.
Right. So, you know, so most 20th century presidents are pretty much, you know, controlled by the Illuminati. And certainly as we advance beyond, you know, the 30s forward, much more so. And Kennedy, of course, came from an Illuminati family. Kennedy's is one of the 13 Illuminati families in America. And he was the chosen son, but he wasn't quite playing ball with the puppet masters. And that makes them angry. And if you don't, you know, obey, he didn't obey. And he thought he was president of the United States. And he thought he was going to do something good for some people. And we can't have that. So they took him out. And Nixon, of course, was someone who they easily controlled from the beginning. But, he, you know, Nixon got a little bit flamboyant there, too. And so they had to take him out. They had to kick him, get him out of office. So they arranged for this fairy tale of you know, Burns and Woodward and Burns supposedly exposing the whole story. Well, it was handed to them on a platter. I mean, it was prearranged that he was going to be exposed, so they could, you know, push him out. And, of course, Clinton, you know, Bush won, of course. Reagan, I should start with him. Jimmy Carter was a nice old boy, but he was a chosen chump who obeyed orders. You know, I mean, he certainly, he wasn't that nasty an individual, I'm happy to say. Nor was Reagan either. I mean, he's not a vicious sort, we find out from people like Bryce Taylor. But certainly a tool, just a Muppet there to, you know, run through the agenda. But with Bush one, you know, there now we got one of the kingmakers, you know, who's this George Bush Sr., my God, what a story there. I mean, Webster Tarpley did a very good job in his unauthorized biography, but he doesn't really tell the heaviest part of the tale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we find out from the Skorzeny photos that the man, German-born infiltrator, sent into the country, and according to what Eric had to say, according to Skorzeny, you know, we think this Wild Bill Donovan was supposedly in charge of the OSS during the war. Apparently, it was young, you know, George Bush,
mm-hmm.
who was, you know, the real deal behind OSS. And again,
and my research confirmed that too. You know,
okay.
The research I did that.
Following the war, 1947, whenever it was, when the CIA was formed, they just took all these Nazis that they were brought into the country and melded them in with their OSS inside guys like Bush Sr., and that's what formed up the CIA. And
you know, there's another aspect of my research that I could actually embellish of that story with some more facts. You know, I came to the conclusion that Circuit Chautauqua was sort of a social conditioning program, acorn
yes.
of its day, okay?
Yes, very good, yeah.
And I had come across this, through dogged research, I had come across a contest that was being held by, it seemed like it was the National Archives was looking for a presentation, and the University of Iowa did a presentation on Circuit Chautauqua. Mm-hmm. And as my article came out, and I mentioned that because that first piece where I described the infiltration of the players in the Federal Reserve, and then I went into Tesla and Circuit Chautauqua, and then I went into the Bush-Walker genealogy. Well, I came across an index file that had some, it was about 4,625, if I remember the number correctly, participants in Circuit Chautauqua,
mm-hmm.
entertainers, singers, musicians, wandering minstrels, preachers, social motivators, and I began, I'm reading this thing, and I'm thinking to myself, this sounds like some kind of Nazi brainwashing program, not knowing the history of Chautauqua in that
yeah.
sense. And then, actually I've driven by the place, you know, I've been to Chautauqua, New York.
Oh.
So this was, totally different from what you think you're seeing when you're there, you know, because it's like a, sort of like a natural resort. It's near the foothills of the Alleghenies, and there's these blue lakes and lawns and park benches and picnic tables and little cabins, things like that.
Yes.
But when they went around the country, they traveled in a tent. One of the guys, and they, of course, they had spies with them. This was nothing but a spy operation.
Yep.
Masquerading, and someone had to know what this was. Someone had to authorize this thing from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. One of the cards, about 2 months ago, I was going back through that file. By the way, that's been taken off the internet. the version that was published at the end of this Ameritech-sponsored, and I think that's Bush, that's a Bush company, from the stolen Wantagate money, and he named everything after Ameritrust, Ameritech, Ameriquest, you know, all coining that phrase.
Right.
To make it sound American. Well,
right.
One of the cards in there was from John Foster Dulles.
Whoa.
I found that very interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay, John Foster Dulles. Now, this is from the late 1800s up till the early, up until the early 30s, 1930s. Okay, so I don't know the exact time Dulles was there, but his name is on one of those cards. Wow. And there are some other people that are on there too. And I could see from the time that this would have occurred, that likely as a child, Otto Skorzeny was there.
Mm.
Because I discerned an alias, and I found the alias.
Wow.
And I found a female name, and it so happens that under his CIA alias in Florida, his wife had a sister with the same first name as one of the names on the card.
Oh, I see.
And then I checked and I found these two individuals coming into Ellis Island as well. Now, people were always coming over, but this was somebody that was being trained to become a spy, you see,
yes.
To come back to this country. So they lived a rather heroic but strangely glorified life that they would be brought back after they carried all this out. This stuff is planned over hundreds of years.
Yep.
That's the whole point.
Yep.
And so, you know, we know Barack Obama was planned. We can look at the story. I've proven that both of his so-called grandparents worked for the CIA on a number of accounts in Oklahoma City and in Seattle and in Hawaii and in Texas and in Lebanon and in Chicago. Is it a surprise that the family that never went to Chicago ends up having a grandson that has nothing to do with anywhere except Chicago?
Yes.
You know?
I mean, you know, you're connecting the dots though.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is it, you know, this connection to Columbia University and Harvard. I find it funny, kind of funny that Michelle Obama is a Harvard graduate herself.
Yes.
And had her law license taken away.
Yep. That's quite amazing that I mentioned to you that I recently...
If she had one.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mentioned to you in one of the archive shows you did with Phil McConnell and that other fellow.
David Hawkins. Yeah,
David. Yes. Wow. What a terrific interviews, though. Were and wow, the revelations about the law firm that Michelle supposed.
You're speaking about Sidley Austin.
Another schemes. Holy mackerel! What a blockbuster of a scandal that is. That very few people know about. I mean, that's right. I'm going to be posting those interviews you did with those two fellows on my website, because that's a tremendous story there that they opened up. That taunting insurance thing is off the chart. It's so unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was such a threat made to people, and I read this on last night's show. During the introduction, I read a piece that refers to the threats that were made to people that try to go offshore to get money they have in other accounts, that they're going to be taken out.
Oh, yes, yeah, you might elaborate.
It seems to me threatening murder, isn't that a crime?
Oh,
now this came through intel, okay? But this came through somebody that's, you know, I mean, we didn't hear him say that, okay? But it certainly fits the pattern. Certainly fits the behavior that's going on.
Yes, right.
That and the arrogance and the cocksuredness that nobody can stop this. Well, mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't agree with that. It can't be stopped. It can't be changed. We will get change.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yes, but it's not going to be the kind of change we were promised.
Yeah. I too echo that sentiment when I get email that people who essentially take a defeatist attitude, they essentially say, well, if everything you're talking about is true, then it's, you know, it's too far advanced and we're goners and all that. Well, you can say that, but you know, you don't win any by his adopting a defeatist position. Anyone who has overcome what seems to be difficult odds has only achieved it because they set their will not to accept defeat. I just saw a documentary on PBS a couple of nights ago about this wonderful documentary about the kamikaze pilots of Japan during World War II, and they're, you know, it had to do with interviews with the, you know, the ones who survived and their friends and relatives and so forth and their mindset, you know, and there was this very tenacious Japanese man who was saying, gutsy as all get out. He was a kamikaze pilot, and he was in a dogfight with American fighters. There was, of course, I guess American-Australian fighters. He was greatly outgunned, and so he's in his dogfight with them, and he ran out of ammunition, you know, his guns that he lost. But he was flying straight towards a Corsair that was flying straight towards him. In other words, they were nose-to-nose flying directly into each other. And he wasn't going to give up. The guy says, I just can't stand losing, you know. It just bothered him so much. He wasn't going to turn and try and run, even though he was out of ammo. He was going to hit, he just wasn't going to let the other guy cow him. That's essentially what he was saying, you know. He says, I just can't stand losing. I'm just so mad, you know. So as it turns out, that the Australian, whoever was flying in the other plane, at the last minute veered off. They could have shot him down. They didn't. They were so apparently impressed by his courage that they just let him go. And so the man's survived. To tell this tale. But he was saying, I just can't stand losing. And so will is everything when it comes to a contest. And even though the odds may seem, you know, how many Spartans were at the Thermopylae Pass compared to their opponents, you know, a mere handful. And yet they, you know, you can do amazing things if you have will and determination. And you can overcome the odds. History has proved it again and again. So
even Yogi Berra has a saying for that.
That's right. That's right. It doesn't mean anything till the fat lady sings.
Well, actually, it ain't over till it's over.
Right. Okay. But it's the same idea. It's the same idea. And that's what I respond to some of those mails. Forget this defeatist crap. You know, we're not going to overcome it by figuring, well, they've got everything. You know, they got all the ducks in line. They've got all the troops. They got all the money. They got everything. Yeah, they got everything except they're not on the right side. And they will cave when they realize that enough people are on the right side, are aware of their game, and aren't going to cooperate. You know, the minions. I'm talking about, you know, the FEMA types, the Homeland Security, the cops, the military people, they're going to cave. They're not going to go along with it if enough citizens wake up and say, no way, we're not going there. They're just going to cave. They won't, you know. So we got to go into it with that attitude that, you know, it's not going to go down. We're not going to let it go down.
Yeah. Well, Ken, we're out of time. This has been interesting.
Okay, I guess we'll have to let it go.
It was a great show for totally unplanned guests, so I want to thank you for coming on to Evident Footprints tonight and sharing all this information and even taking the call from Greg.
Yeah, sure.
Greg called in another show a couple of weeks ago and had a few questions, and I just recommended he read that article. And I was probably going to talk about that a little bit with Jim Murray tonight anyway. So don't know what happened, but that's the first time Jim's actually missed a show.
Yeah, there has to be a compelling reason.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure some emergency came up, but that's not like him, you know, to not even let us know. So,
right. Something went up. Yeah.
Something happened. So, yeah, in any event, we're hoping he's with us next week. Now, I'm doing two shows. If I can announce this to the listening audience, tomorrow afternoon, first Eastern time is from 1 to 3 p.m. or West Coast is 10 to noon. 10 a.m. to noon, that is, on Republic Broadcasting Network with Greg Evenson, who has been a guest on this show. His show is called Voices from the Heartland, and we're going to be discussing this topic and some other issues. And then later in the afternoon, from 5 to 7, I'll be with Michael Herzog on the American Awakening on Oracle Broadcasting Network, and that is from 5 to 7 on the East Coast, or from 3 to 5 on the, no, from 2 to 4 on the West Coast. 2 to 4 on the West Coast, 5 to 7 on the East Coast. And we've got a great series of shows lined up for next week. I've got Sam Sewell coming on Monday, and he's the national spokesperson for the American Grand Jury Organization. So that's going to be a barn burner there. We're going to hear about what the American people are doing behind the scenes to resolve these issues, and that's in direct line with the last topic that you brought up. So be looking forward to that. Anyway, I want to thank you, Ken, for being on the show, and look forward to your next regular appearance on the show.
Thank you.
And I'm anxious to see those enlargements whenever they happen. So till I see you next Thursday, the 14th, have a great weekend. And I'll say goodnight now. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our unexpected special guest, Mr. Ken Adachi. You can visit his website at educate-yourself.org to look at any of the pictures he was talking about that he has been working with. Or you can read my article at directlightproductions.com. Click on articles, and there's a whole bunch of them that have been either on the Idaho Observer or on my website. So, with that, special thanks to Don Newsom and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, Greg, our caller this evening, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Have a night filled with peace, love, and light. Hopefully, we'll see each other tomorrow. If not then, on Monday. In the meantime, have a good night.